Good evening, and welcome to the VPR gubernatorial debate. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm joined in VPR's performance studio by Bob Kinzel.
We've invited four candidates to tonight's debate: Democrat Peter Shumlin, Republican Scott Milne, Libertarian Dan Feliciano, and Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone.
The candidates have agreed to our format, which includes time guidelines. They will wrap up their statements when they see their time is running out, and if they don't, we will gently remind them.
Now, during tonight's debate, the candidates will have a chance to ask each other questions, and we also have some questions submitted by the public. In the first round of the debate, Jane and I will pose questions to the candidates.
And we remind the candidates that answers should be limited to 1 minute, and there will be follow-up questions also with 1 minute answers.
So let's begin tonight with questions about health care. And Mr. Shumlin, let's start with you. By most accounts, the operations of Vermont Health Connect, the state's health care exchange, have been very disappointing. The state has spent over $100 million on this project, and many aspects of the exchange still don't work. In fact, things are so bad, last week you shut the exchange down. Now, a review of the problems at the website said this, quote, "The state of Vermont does not believe it is accountable for project outcomes." Some think this is a staggering statement. Here we have a $100 million project, and the state of Vermont does not believe it's accountable for project outcomes. Now, there's some lawmakers, including a number of Democrats, who say this happened because you personally did not pay enough attention to this issue. So is this a situation where you delegated authority and failed to keep tabs on what was happening, or is it a case where you did pay attention and simply did a poor job?
You know, I have said many times that the biggest frustration of my governorship, and governors make lots of decisions, has been dealing with the Health Connect website. And no one's been more frustrated than me with the progress. I think it's worth mentioning there was an article in USA Today just yesterday outlining the frustrations that other governors have faced and, frankly, that the president has faced. And many are doing one of the same things that we're doing here in Vermont. Here's the point. We are determined, and I am accountable for ensuring that we have a website that works. We want it to be working well by re-enrollment time, which is on November 15, and we're taking the actions and the necessary steps that we need to take to increase the likelihood that that's going to be happening. So, big picture, you know, we can sit here and quarterback this one till the cows come home. We have signed up now 167,000 Vermonters. We have over 30,000 have purchased plans through the website. It doesn't function as we want it to, as it was promised. We are working hard to make sure that it does. And it was prudent to make the decisions that we did to take it down for both security as well as functionality. I think as my Commissioner Chen, who I take my recommendations from, said, hard to fix the car when it's running. So you can't fix it when you're driving it. We're making progress. And I think it's worth mentioning that we're making progress on cost containment. You might point out that it has nothing to do with the website, but for the first time, Vermont has seen only 3% increases in hospital budgets across the state for 2 years in a row. It's the lowest increases in a long, long time. And so we're making a lot of progress on cost containment. We're trying to make progress on coverage. We've got a lot of Vermonters in. Everyone's signed up. Everyone's covered. Hasn't all been through the website. So the website's been the disappointment. But I think a lot of the other system is working well.
You know, you talk a lot about
1 minute.
Yes. You talk a lot about accountability and transparency. I think some people would like to know, is this a case where you just took your eye off the ball?
No, this is a case where we work 24/7 with extremely dedicated folks working their tails off to get the job done. And we had a very short timeline to get it done as was prescribed by federal law. And frankly, it's why other governors have faced the same challenges.
So you've said you want to implement a single-payer system in 2017. Are you committed to unveiling a financing plan to lawmakers in January? I ask that because you don't have a very good track record on that issue. And can Vermont really put a full single-payer system in place in 2 years, or is it more likely that it's going to have to be phased in over 2, 3, 4, or 5 years?
Well, we've already begun, and I think the point I just made is, you know, there are two pieces to single-payer health care. The first is we've got to get cost under control. What that means is that if we keep spending money on health care for the next decade the way we did for the last decade, it's going to consume the income that Vermonters need, particularly middle-income Vermonters, middle-class Vermonters, to do the other things we need to do to get money in our pockets. In other words, healthcare costs are rising faster than our incomes. We have a real opportunity to curb it, and that's what Algo Bay and the Green Mountain Healthcare Board is doing with our hospital, with our docs, our providers, our nurses. We're moving from a quantity-based system to a quality-based payment system. That's a huge transformation. It's happening right now, and we're in the process of making that transformation. Second, I have said, and I mean it, that we can have a much smarter way of paying for health care. And I will have a proposal for the legislature in January that moves us from a broken premium system where some pay, some don't, and those that pay for those who refuse, to one that's based on our ability to pay. Now, this is a tough challenge. It's hard to do, but it's incredibly important for jobs, for quality of life. I think healthcare should be a right and not a privilege, and I hope to deliver on that promise.
Mr. Feliciano, let's turn to you. You've been very critical of Peter Shumlin's healthcare plans. In fact, you want to repeal Act 48, the state's healthcare reform law that was passed in 2011. Instead, you prefer a free market system that you say will lead to lower premiums through greater competition. Well, Vermont tried this route once before. It was in the 1990s. There were a number of companies like Golden Rule that insured only young and healthy people. If you had medical conditions or if you were older, they simply rejected your application. Mm-hmm. So if your free market approach is put into place, how are you going to ensure that this policy of cherry-picking customers doesn't happen again?
Well, right now we have law. First of all, I commend Peter for shutting down the system, right? When I heard that the system got shut down, my first reaction was, good, we all want to make sure we take care of the patient information and their financial information. So I kudos to that. But I think opening up the marketplace will bring in niche players that will provide coverage. It doesn't have to be a free-for-all where you can have a certain providers covering certain things. Right now we have a rating system where everyone's getting charged the same. And I think that's driving the cost up for the young people. We keep talking about young people not being able to survive in Vermont. If they're going to have health care costs that are astronomical, they're not going to be able to get that health care. I still believe that if we open up the marketplace, reduce some of the regulations, that we can have a broader group of clients, insurers come in and provide those services. And that's only on the premium side. So we still have to talk about the cost side, which is the healthcare delivery cost, which is 75% of the total cost. So when you talk about the premium side, that's a small portion of the savings. The healthcare delivery side is where we need to focus our efforts.
So under your plan, could an insurance company come in and say, no, I don't want to insure you. You're old and sick.
Mm-hmm. Well, we would have to see it and evaluate that. There's going to have to be some sort of spectrum in there, some sort of weighting system to see how we can do that. But I've said all along that I think we can have a modified rating system where they would have to take in a certain percentage and spread out some of those costs. But I still think it's the best way to go.
You also say that you want to repeal the Green Mountain Care Board, mm-hmm. get rid of them altogether. That's right. The group that regulates insurance premium mm-hmm. rates and hospital budgets. So is it your belief that it's inappropriate for government to regulate these issues and you just let the free market determine policies and premiums?
There will always be some regulation. I'm not foolish enough to think that there's not going to be some sort of regulation and that would pass. But I think that the free markets can do a better job, a more efficient job of providing health care, providing insurance, and delivering health care without having the government involved at all.
Mr. Milne, good to see you this evening.
Likewise. Thank you, Bob.
Now, we've heard from two of your opponents, Peter Shumlin and Dan Feliciano, their ideas, quite different on health care. I don't think voters have much of an idea about your thoughts on health care. You've said that you are, quote, agnostic about single payer. You don't want to be critical of Peter Shumlin's proposal until you see the details and how it would be financed. So here's a great chance for you to tell the voters of Vermont, what is Scott Milne's health care plan?
Sure. Thank you, Bob. And I think coming after Peter and Dan, I think you've got two extremes of the spectrum of choices for healthcare in the nation represented. I clearly am a more pragmatic, practical, moderate on the issue. I think what we want with healthcare is a system. If we're going to change things, we want to do something, decide whether it's going to cost less. Is it going to save us money? I'm talking about moving towards single payer. Is it going to save us money? Is it going to improve access to people that don't have insurance now? Is it going to enable people to keep their doctors and hospitals? And finally, is it going to be good for the economy and create jobs? I think, and in part, it's because of the your question that started off, Bob. It's the way that the state of Vermont has managed this health care boondoggle is not only terrible for people that think single-payer might be good because it's ruined any chance of it happening, even more importantly for voters that are concerned about rising taxes and out-of-control spending in the state government, the way that the Shumlin administration has managed the health care system is an insight into mismanagement of the people's money and other parts of the government. So what I would say is it's absolutely implausible that we're going to be moving to single-payer in 2017. There's no way that I'm convinced it's going to save money. There's no way I'm convinced that the data is there, that it's improving access. There's no way that I'm convinced that it's going to enable choices to stay the way they are now. And clearly, there's triggers in Act 48 that it's not going to go forward if it's not creating jobs. We've got a governor that came in 2010, said single payer, it was going to be how we were going to fix the economy. It's 4 years later, and we're saying, I'll tell you how it's going to work and how much it's going to cost after you elect me again. With all due respect, I think it's time for Vermonters to take a more moderate, balanced approach and elect Scott Milne.
So I've got a pretty good idea of what you don't like. You don't like single payer. I don't have a clue, really, of what you do want. Because you explained the things that you don't like about Peter Shumlin's plan. Could you just briefly tell us, are you supporting the status quo?
First of all, I wouldn't go so strong as to say I don't like single payer. I think there's a possibility way down the road that single payer could be something that makes sense to look at. What I would say is we're not going to be off of the exchange that we created in 2015. So we've got a year to see if we can get our exchange working and see how that's going to pan out for us. I do not agree with Dan that we should dismantle Green Mountain Care Board. I think it's done a good job. I think it's a very complex system, and people at this table know more about it than I do. But I think you hit the nail on the head, Governor Shumlin. Hospital budgets increased 3% this year. That's good. I think that's a good sign. That's something good that's come out of this. And I think it's the Green Mountain Care Board's management. And we're already coming into this, arguably, we're one of the most regulated states in the country for hospitals anywhere, anyway. But with a 3% raise in hospital budgets, we've got an 8-9% rise in health care insurance rates again. We'll get into later, I assume, all these cost shifts that go on from the government-run side of medical now that go over to the private sector. Imagining that all of everything going to the private from the private sector to the government is going to fix things seems to me to be delusional.
Peter Diamondstone, thanks for being here tonight.
Nice to be here. I wish everybody else who was a candidate could be here, too.
Well, we're happy to have you here. And on the issue of health care, would you agree with Peter Shumlin that all Vermonters have a right to affordable health care, and the best way to achieve this goal is to implement a single-payer system in Vermont, and everyone would have coverage, and they would pay for it based on their ability to pay?
No. I don't think Obamacare can work. You can't add 30 million people to receive services while we have decreasing amount of services being offered. I mean, you do the arithmetic and you see everybody's going to get less in services except the elite, like the governor, the members of Congress, and those people who don't get the garbage insurance that we get, but who get most favored treatment as an elite. The President of the United States doesn't have Medicare. I mean, neither the members of Congress, and they don't have retirement under Social Security. They have. So understanding that it's being proposed by an elite in the first place, we need to understand that it can't work. And the reason it can't work in Vermont is because we don't have the money to fund it. And the reason we don't have the money to fund it is because we are tagged onto the federal tax system, which has built into it loopholes for the wealthy. For example, you're a Mason, put up a wall today, you get paid $100, you're going to pay 13% Social Security tax. You make $100 in the stock market today, you're going to pay any Social Security tax on that? No. You make $100 on dividends, are you going to pay any Social Security tax on that? No. All that money is out there waiting for us to collect it, and the rich are getting away with not having to spend, not having to pay it. So instead of letting them get away with that. Let's collect it in Vermont and pay for not just Medicare for everyone, but also we should have education at social charge, at social expense from beginning to end. If Iraq could do it before we bombed them, we could do it.
Do you think philosophically that people have a right to health care?
The Liberty Union platform begins, "The role of governments, plural, is to provide a materially secure life for everyone on the planet, including socialized medicine specifically." So it's right there in your face.
So under your system, you're talking about separating somebody's coverage from their place of employment. They would just have it as a resident, as a citizen.
That's right. It belongs to each of us, to each according to need, from each according to ability. So at least according to need, everybody needs that care. And one of the things that this has provided that I have to give it a one kick up is in trauma and disease care. There's an improvement in that the broader coverage means that people who couldn't have any care before will have care now. That's an improvement. But spreading it thinner means everybody else gets less, unless you're among the elite who give themselves better health care coverage.
You're listening to a live gubernatorial debate on VPR. I'm Jane Lindholm along with Bob Kinzel. We have four candidates here tonight: Republican Scott Milne, Libertarian Dan Feliciano, Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone, and Democrat Peter Shumlin. We've just been hearing from the candidates on health care. Bob Kinzel's questions for them: the economy and the jobs picture for Vermonters remains foremost on the minds of many voters as they head into this election season. So I'm going to focus my question on those subjects. Candidates, I'd like you to focus your answers on what specifically as governor you could do to promote job growth and on how much control and what role a governor actually has to stimulate job growth over a two-year period. Dan Feliciano, the question goes to you first. The libertarian position is generally to remove barriers and government intervention when it comes to business development. Do you believe the government has a role in encouraging specific sectors of job growth or businesses?
No, I think the government needs to stay out of the way. So I think that if we cut our spending, so we want to talk about growing jobs. Right now our companies are being stifled with our property taxes and our total spending. Our tax rates, I've traveled all around the country as a consulting, helping other companies turn around, and our tax system and our cost structure is oppressive. We're lucky we have people that want to live here because this is such a great place to raise a family. But at some point, the cost of doing business here in Vermont is going to be prohibitive and people will leave. So I think the government needs to cut our spending, cut our property taxes, encourage our young people to stay here, ensure that we have school choice so that the young kids that are going to have young families will want to stay. So I think cutting spending, cutting taxes, and providing school choice will provide a more reasonable economy for us and a more stable and predictable economy where business will want to come here, stay here, and thrive here.
Would you remove Act 250 permitting, for example, if you had the ability to do that?
Not necessarily remove it, but I think it needs to be repealed. I misspoke of that. I think it needs to be modified. It's very oppressive. And how things can get twisted to be an environmental issue. I was talking to someone who wanted to put a sound stage in like a little bar that they had. And they didn't think they needed an Act 250 permit because the platform was movable. But what happened is someone said, well, if you put a bigger platform in, it's going to have more traffic. It was a joke about what it was going to be and how it would actually impact the environment. It was simply a bigger stage, and it became a whole environmental threat. So I think we need to de-hassle government by providing different solutions and making it easier to get permits and to have businesses thrive.
And is there any role for the government in incentivizing certain businesses using tax incentives?
I don't think government is smart enough to know which businesses are going to thrive. I don't think they should be in the business of picking winners and losers. So I think no. I think business, we provide a fair playing field for everyone, a low tax rate, low property taxes, school choice. Businesses will want to come here. Businesses will thrive here. Our kids will stay here.
Scott Milne, you have been short on prescriptions and long on telling us what's wrong with Governor Shumlin's administration in your campaign so far. Can you offer specifics on what you think would work to encourage business and job growth in Vermont?
Sure, Jane. Thank you for the question. I think Governor Shumlin, I disagree with Dan. I think there's a symbiotic relationship between good government and a good economy. We clearly need good government to have a good economy. If Governor Shumlin was correct and single payer came about in 2014 the way it was supposed to be, and it was going to be a panacea for us, it was going to revitalize our economy, I wouldn't be running for governor. I don't think it's going to turn out to be that solution down the road for us either. What we need to do is focus on getting our government working right in Vermont, which is not having the rate of spending increase at three times the rate of the growth of the economy. With doing that, that's going to make things better. I think the simple things that we should be doing, and my whole campaign is let's slow down a little bit and not take risks and be first on too many things that are going to cost us a lot of money. But what we need to get back to are the basics of having a good employment agency, good job training programs, good voc tech programs that work a little bit better than what we've seen right now in Vermont.
So what would you do to encourage those? What kind of prescriptions would you put through, or what would you ask the legislature to fund that would do that?
I think the Annie Noonan's department is not effective and doesn't
this
do a good
job. This is the Department of Labor.
Does not do a good job of job training. I had a situation myself where we had a contract where we thought we were going to be able to hire 35 people. We would have brought in, you know, somewhere north of $1 million worth of salaries to Vermont. Reached out to the Department of Labor for help, and their response was, send us a job description and we'll send it to the unemployment offices for you. So those jobs would have gone to multiple states rather than all to Vermont, which was what I was trying to do. I've been running around talking to some of the larger employers in the state. Laugh isn't the right word. They cry about the professionalism they get from the Department of Labor on job training things, and the ones that have the money do the job training on their own, and the ones that don't probably don't have as much business or as good a talent pool as they have, or eventually end up looking out of state.
So increasing job training, funding for job training.
Increasing job training is one. Having a college system that's more affordable for kids is very important and something that I think there's some very good ideas on the table to talk about.
And would that mean giving more funding to UVM or something different, UVM and the state colleges?
The state colleges more so than UVM, although I think the state colleges, I think we're close to last right in the country for a percentage of support that comes from the state for the state college system. I think that's a shortcoming that we should be working hard to figure out a way of fixing it, especially for Vermont kids.
Peter Diamondstone, what's your jobs plan for the state, and how would you work with businesses to promote growth and create jobs for Vermonters?
I'm not much in favor of creating jobs. The first one that comes to mind is the Republican Doobie brothers, Shumlin, Sanders, Leahy, and Welch, saying we need to convert Burlington Airport into Bagram 2 in order to create 100 jobs in Burlington. Creation of jobs is – and I, on this line, I want to point something out. The similarity between the Republicans and the Democrats on issues of war is immense and monstrous. And every time you vote for the dog catcher – or some low officer, you are building the structure of war in the capitalist parties. I lost my train of thought. Oh, jobs by themselves is not a move in the right direction. We need to only build jobs that we can say we're glad to have. And those, for instance, if we had a land use project that said, no GMOs can be grown in Vermont. If stuff blows across the line, it will be considered a trespasser and a defective product like a car without brakes, and they will be charged with trespass in Vermont courts and paid multiple times damages. That's a job people could do.
Well, let me pick up on that then, because if you were telling farmers they couldn't grow GMO crops, would that not put some farmers out of business? So how would you square the balance sheet on that?
I don't. We just don't do it. You want to grow GMO wheat? Go to New York and grow GMO wheat. But Vermont land should not be used, air or water, for the development of GMOs, and that should be a legislative enactment that we undertake now. Provide plenty of work for Vermonters doing good stuff.
So given that some of the policies that you would put in place would add regulation, add regulatory framework, or put prohibitions on things like growing genetically modified seeds in Vermont, would you think that there needs to be a boost in social services to account for any Vermonters who lose jobs because of those programs?
Well, I go to the first sentence of the Liberty Union platform that says, Everybody on the planet is entitled to a materially secure life in a socialist system, not just the United States. You can't create a socialist system anywhere. 9/11 is a good example. 9/11, what year? 1973. Arbenz, socialist in Guatemala, and Ali Allende, and every time a socialist government comes up, the capitalist queen comes out with the hatchets. What do we do in Cuba? What's his name? Mossadegh in Iran. So nobody can create a single nation socialist society, except it's a perverted form of socialism, perverted by having to defend it itself against the Red Queen of capitalism, the terrorist, the United States.
We're going to turn finally on the issue of jobs and the economy as we continue VPR's gubernatorial debate to Peter Shumlin. You note that nearly 10,000 jobs have been created since you took office, but nearly as many Vermonters have left the workforce in that time. Recent reports show that more Vermonters were living in poverty in 2013 than in 2012, and the median household income in Vermont has dropped. So it's a mixed economic picture at best. Why hasn't the economy done better under your administration?
Well, let's remember that we're part of the other 49 states, and the United States of America is having a huge challenge. As we go into this recovery, we are seeing that the folks who already had are doing quite well, that the middle class is getting kicked in the teeth, and that lower-income Americans and Vermonters are continuing to lose ground. So when I came into office, I said I'd focus on jobs and the economy and middle-class wages because that's really what we need to do. And I'm proud of some of the progress we've made. As you just mentioned, Vermont, we have created thousands of new jobs. Vermont's one of the states that actually has more jobs now than we had at the peak of the economic boom in 2005. A lot of states can't say that. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation. There's no question about that. And contrary to what Scott continues to say, I constantly talk to employers and say, get me trained workforce. We'll put them to work. We've got jobs. And we're making progress in the right direction. Now, having said that, if you're a middle-class Vermonter whose wages haven't gone up and you're still working one or two or three jobs, if you're a low-income Vermonter whose wages have gone down, none of those statistics mean a darn thing. So we've got to continue to do what we've been doing, which is grow jobs. As you know, we've got now the highest number of solar jobs of any state in the country.
I'm going to have to stop you because we're hitting the time limit, but I am going to keep going on this line of questioning. When you talk about job growth that we've had, that we have returned to the peak job growth, the number of jobs, most of those jobs have been in Chittenden County. So what about the rest of the people in Vermont who aren't seeing that same level of job growth that Chittenden County is?
Well, again, I'm proud of the fact that when I took over, coming from Windham County, I said I'm going to grow jobs all over Vermont, not just in Chittenden County, where it's traditionally been the economic engine of the state. And guess what? Fastest growth rate on jobs for the first time in Vermont history? Northeast Kingdom, because we're up there creating jobs. So as you know, I've worked hard to bring capital into the state that would help grow those jobs. We're continuing to see job expansion in other parts of the state. I'm not saying we're done. I'm saying we've just begun. We've got a lot more work to do. But if you look at what we're doing in early childhood education, universal pre-K, 2 years of free college now under my administration, with college debt being the biggest challenge, particularly first-generation students. If you look at what we're doing on renewables, building them out in energy efficiency, growing more green jobs, what we're doing in the food and farm sector with a real boom in our farm-to-plate, locally grown foods being shipped all over the country, 2,200 new ag and food-related jobs in the state since I've been governor. We're making real progress. So my point is we should not let off on the gas. We've got more work to do. There's still too many middle-class Vermonters and low-income Vermonters hurting, but we're headed in the right direction because of the courageous and bold decisions that we're making.
Let me just ask you in a couple of seconds, you know, Vermont has always been a rural, small growth state. Is it possible to have a robust economy with jobs for all Vermonters while keeping the rural character that Vermonters have valued over the generations?
Absolutely. It means broadband every last mile, which we've got 99% of the way, and we now have a solution to every single address in Vermont. It means great schools, from early child education to higher education to workforce retraining. I don't know what Scott's talking about my extraordinary commissioner of labor, but I can tell you I constantly have job creators say to me, thank you for your workforce training program. It's the best I could ever imagine. And Scott, if you've got jobs coming in and you ever have a problem like you claim you just had, call us and tell us. We'll have people on the ground immediately to work with you. That's how we function. Don't do it on a debate. Call us when you got the jobs.
This is VPR's Governor's Debate with Libertarian Dan Feliciano, Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone, Democrat Peter Shumlin, and Republican Scott Milne. Coming up next, the candidates will ask each other questions, and then later in the debate, we'll have questions that members of the public have submitted on the issues of most importance to them. This is VPR.
VPR's new video series, Live from the Fort, connects you with the local music scene. Check out the latest music video recorded live in the VPR Performance Studio with Brett Hughes and the Honky Tonk Crowd. And stay tuned for more homegrown sounds from your favorite musicians and bands. Live from the Fort, VPR's new music video series at VPR.net.
Support for VPR comes from Green Mountain Power, offering text notifications during power outages and storms, information at greenmountainpower.com, and from Edgewater Gallery, Middlebury, featuring contemporary and traditional fine art and artisan jewelry. Gift registry available, edgewatergallery-vt.com.
Welcome back to VPR's Governor's Debate with Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone, Democrat Peter Shumlin, Republican Scott Milne, and Libertarian Dan Feliciano. I'm Bob Kinzel with Jane Lindholm.
In this round, the candidates are going to ask each other questions, one-on-one. Just a reminder to the candidates, your questions should be 30 seconds or less. No speeches here. And the answers are 60 seconds. Follow-up questions are encouraged, but they need to be on topic.
So to start us off, Scott Milne, who gets your first question?
Governor Shumlin, why not start with you? Governor Shumlin, I appreciated our debate at Tunbridge Fairgrounds a little over a week ago. I've heard from four different people that there was an emergency, sort of last-minute called meeting Saturday night after that debate with Democratic leaders in Windsor County that you attended. I'm just curious, at that meeting, how many of the folks that were there, I guess, to help you sort of regroup after that debate, work for the state directly or work for nonprofits or advocacy groups that are funded by state dollars primarily?
Scott, I'm totally unaware of what you're talking about, and that doesn't usually happen to me. So I can tell you what I did after the Tunbridge Fair. I went up and spoke with the state employees, the VSCA in Killington. Made one other campaign stop, went to the Windsor County Democratic dinner in Heartland. It was a very good event, and I went home. So the meeting that you're referring to did not happen.
Okay. My bad. Thank you.
No follow-up question to that?
Nope.
Peter Shumlin, who gets your first question?
I guess I'll start with Dan. And Dan, thanks for the articulate campaign that you're running. During the primary, you sought the Republican nomination as a write-in candidate. And I'm just wondered whether you could speak to why you feel Vermont Republicans would be making a better choice, choosing you over Scott Milne for governor.
Well, thanks for the question, Governor. So I ran a write-in campaign because this election cycle is about the issues, and it's not about party or politics. I was encouraged to do so because my platform consists of stopping the single-payer health care system, cutting spending, reducing property taxes, school choice, as well as protecting the Second Amendment. So those things resonated with many people, not just Republicans. It was independents. It was Democrats. It was across the board. So I was glad to get that endorsement and encouragement to run. And I still think this election is basically around those four issues, those three issues, and that's why I've been garnering so many supporters.
So what do you think the main issues are that differentiate you from Scott Mill?
I'm a small government guy. I want to stop single payer. I want to cut total spending. And I want to reduce property taxes and provide school choice. My whole platform is about reducing government, reducing costs, and ensuring that people have the right to choose. They can choose their schools. They can choose their doctors. They can choose their health plans. So basically, I'm a small government guy who knows how to cut spending and has done so in the past with a deep healthcare experience. Perfect time for a guy like me.
Thank you.
Peter Diamondstone, the next question goes to you. Who would you like to ask a question of?
Dan, in 1988, I'm going to ask you to comment on a Liberty Union policy that was adopted in 1988. That policy had two sides of it, one libertarian and one socialist. The libertarian side said, you want to put substance into your body, it's your body, do what you want. Mm-hmm. The socialist side said, but you can't buy the substance on a private market. We're socialists. That market is closed. Only government can fill that market, import, build, and sell. And only at cost, so that no private market can develop. And so I wondered how you as a libertarian react to the libertarian side and the socialist side of that proposal.
So the libertarians believe that people should be free to do as they choose to do so in the privacy of their homes, as long as they're not harming anyone else and as long as the government doesn't have to pay for it itself.
So we're on the same side on the user.
Yep.
We agree on the user, but what about the business end? Do you agree that that should only be a socialized industry run by the government of the United States for importation and manufacture, including both prescription and illicit drugs?
No, I still think there's a business for the prescription drugs, and I think pharma does a great job of investing money to develop great new products, and diabetes products and all these medicines that people want, and they should be able to profit from it. So in the short, I believe that drug companies have a place and they deserve to earn a fair profit.
And is that true of illicit drugs as well?
I don't see the big pharma companies getting involved in the illicit drugs.
No, I didn't say big pharma.
Right.
But there are private sellers of cocaine and heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And do you believe in letting them continue to sell privately?
I'm still up in the air on that topic of what we can do. I've come out and, I'm not sure about that. It depends on how we can protect the citizens. And I have young kids, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
I have young kids, they ride their bikes in the streets, and the last thing I want them to do is get injured from someone.
So do you agree with the Liberty Union position on illegal drugs only obtained from government sources with no taxes on it and no increase in price to make room for private sellers?
I'm not sure. I'd have to think more about that. I can get back to you on that policy.
We're going to flip now, and Dan Feliciano, you get to ask someone a question.
All right, Governor Shumlin, I'll ask you a question. Earlier this week, you became the first governor to call for states to divest their pension funds of fossil fuel companies, right? With $3 billion in unfunded pension liabilities that you don't have a plan to fix, why would you put Vermont pension funds at greater risk of losing the investment into returns that are coming from these investments right now? So
Dan, let me just back up a little bit and correct the beginning part of your question. There's been a discussion in Vermont about divestiture, and what I have said in concert with our treasurer, Beth Pierce, is that we believe that having a seat at the table, owning the stocks and having a seat at the table of the oil companies is a good place to be. And I've also said that since we're not moving fast enough on climate change, and I feel it's the biggest challenge that we face as a state and as a planet, that I'm willing to look at any suggestions that move us more quickly. Now, if you look at the most recent history on this one, or I should say data, the world temperature has gone up about 2 degrees. Now most scientists will go up 2 degrees. That was the prediction just a few years ago. Now most scientists are saying it's going to go up 4 degrees. That has significant disastrous effects for this planet. So what I said about divestiture is I'm willing to take a look at it. I didn't say I would call for it. because I think we should look at everything that we can do to advance the ball more quickly. I don't think that's the sharpest knife of all the things that we could do, but I certainly am always willing to look at it. But right now, as you know, I'm in sync with our treasurer on this one. Having said that,
I'm going to stop you so Dan Feliciano can ask a follow-up.
Sure.
So what is the plan then? So if you're expecting that we're going to get the same rate of return by divesting out of those fossil fuels? And how do we, so
what
my whole concern is, how do we get this $3 billion in unfunded pension liabilities taken care of? It's in no one's plan. Right. It's sitting there on the balance sheet naked.
So we have made progress on the pension shortfall, which is what I was about to address. As you know, we made an agreement with both the teachers and the state employees on the areas that have been underwater on the pensions. We've increased the contribution they're making, and we're working together with them to try and right the ship. This is a problem that governor has been facing for some time. We've made some real progress there. Governor Douglas made some progress, and we're headed in the right direction. So we believe that we're in much better shape than we were when I took over. Having said that, there's more work to do, and you know, I've now balanced four consecutive budgets to the chagrin of some of my Democrats without raising income taxes, sales taxes, rooms and meals taxes. I'm a business person. I know how to balance budgets. I've proven that we can do it, and we have more work to do on our pensions, as you know.
This is VPR's debate among four of the candidates for governor, and in this segment, the candidates are questioning one another on the key issues in this race. We're going to go back now to Peter Diamondstone. You have a chance to ask a second question.
Libertarians from the far left of the libertarian spectrum, from Friedman to Ayn Rand, object to government interference in the economic system that they want to flow freely. I am opposed as a libertarian to patents and copyrights, and I am opposed to the state interfering in business by creating corporations. As a libertarian, how do you stand on patents, copyrights, and the creation of corporations?
Is this question for Dan Feliciano?
Yeah.
Okay. Boy, I'm getting all the questions today.
Well, you and I have a lot in common.
All right, so I think people have the right to their intellectual property, and that property needs to be protected. So if you came up with a great patented idea, an idea, I think you have the copyright and the patent to own that and to profit from that.
So you believe in government interference in
– It's protecting someone's – so what I believe in is in protecting someone's intellectual property, and that to me is the same as personal property. So you cannot benefit from something that I've created without compensating me fairly.
In the socialist system, we say to each according to their needs. So if the person who is writing is free now to write from the heart and not from the market, doesn't that produce a different writing than if you're just producing to sell something as opposed to writing something from your heart?
We're not stopping anyone from writing right to your heart's content.
Well, Peter, I'm going to stop you there because we're out of time on this round. And Bob, moving over to you.
Peter Shumlin, who gets your second question tonight?
I'll ask Scott a question. Scott, you have numerous times throughout this campaign called me and my administration radical, progressive. You do that many, many times. Here are some of the policies that I've successfully fought for over the past – just the past 2 years. Universal pre-K, so that every kid gets a strong start. Programs that give Vermonters 2 free years of college when the middle class is struggling with college debt. Raising a minimum wage so that low-income workers can actually have some hope of moving out of poverty. Increasing funding for the downtown revitalization, which is working, including in the town of Barrie. And passing GMO labeling so the consumers can know what's in their food, along with an effective effort to fight opiate addiction. Which of those policies do you disagree with, and which ones would you push to repeal?
Since you used all my time asking the question, I'll try to be brief. I also want to do a shout out to Peter Diamondstone, just so folks listening on the radio, Peter and I are doing this without notes. Dan's reading questions from a paper, as is Governor Shumlin, so I'm happy to answer questions with my brain, not with things I wrote down ahead of time to bring into the test. I think the GMO labeling bill is a good example of a radical, progressive management of a bill by your administration, Governor Shumlin. The transparency aspects of that bill are good. I applaud those. I find it hypocritical that you're holding Monsanto, Unilever, big food companies to a higher level of transparency than you're willing to hold your own administration. You've got a plan locked up in the fifth floor of the Pavilion Office Building of how you're going to fund health care, allegedly. You've gone to court to not tell people about it, yet you want to go to private businesses and force them to go into a lawsuit. I would have move forward with that plan in the way that Maine did, where it would have had a trigger and a bunch of states would have done it. It would not have been radical. Progressive would have had the same impact for consumers.
So of all that list, you would repeal GMO labeling?
I didn't say I'd repeal it. I'm not even positive I would have vetoed the bill if I was in your shoes.
So you're against it, but you're for it?
No. No. I could do the flip-flop thing on you. You know, I'm running a debate on ideas. I'm running a campaign of ideas. I've got some great ideas, and I'm not doing soundbite flip-flop stuff. You flip-flopped on, you know, you're totally doubling down on single payer on Tuesday when you're with your Democratic announcement. Then you're on a statewide radio program 3 days later, and I'm not going to go forward with it unless it's going to be good for the economy. So if you want to do the soundbite kind of campaign, we can do that. What I said very clearly is you managed that bill in a radical progressive way. You could have gotten the same results in a much more business-friendly way that would have done great things for contributing to a business-friendly climate in Vermont, which would be good for business, which would be good for government because government's funded by business.
We're going to move now to Dan Feliciano, your second question.
This question will go to Scott. I've been very clear about my support for the Second Amendment and Article 16 of the Vermont Constitution, strongly opposing any sort of gun controls and any chartering effects by Burlington. You've been on the record as saying you do not support gun registration and universal background checks. Why won't you come out more forcefully and defend the Second Amendment and the rights of people to own and bear arms?
I think the gun issue is a non-issue in this campaign. I believe Governor Shumlin, yourself, and myself have the same positions. I know people came out today and, you know, were criticizing. Governor Shumlin's going to get the NRA endorsement. That's the way they do it. The gun owners of Vermont, I think, are going to not favor me over you because they were with you in the primary. But I have the same positions on guns that you and Governor Shumlin do.
Follow up?
So you will fight vigorously to support the Second Amendment in Article 16 of the Constitution?
I'm not going to fight vigorously. I'm going to advocate as governor that the gun laws that we have on the books are fine. I'm going to fight vigorously to create jobs in Vermont. I'm going to fight vigorously to figure out how to fund education so that we don't have double-digit property increases and property tax increases that aren't relevant to school budgets and all of these other things. Talking about gun rights is a red herring. All three of us agree with the same programs as long as what we're saying now is what we're going to do when we get there.
Scott Milne, you've had the last two questions directed at you. Now it's your turn to direct a question at someone else.
Jane, who do you think's in first place so far?
That is not my prerogative to answer.
Peter, I'll ask Dan. Dan, we enjoyed a debate together with Bill Doyle's class before the Republican primary, which I think I got 75% of the vote in. You tout that you're going to be a great governor because you're a turnaround specialist and you know how to re-engineer and you can take costs out of things. And that's what I think you said you're going to take 10% of the cost of state government out. And like Governor Shumlin, you're going to tell us how you're going to do that after the election. So I think history repeats itself. If you're a turnaround expert and you've worked for big companies and you've helped companies save billions of dollars, is that right?
Yep.
How many jobs have you recommended those companies eliminate as part of your turnaround recommendations, and how many jobs have actually been eliminated at those companies relative to how many you suggested needed to be cut?
Right. Well, during a turnaround, that the first 10% always comes out of costs and capital and those kind of things. So not all savings is our FTEs. I've been clear about saying that when you go in and you can turn around a company, there are many cost aspects when you look at a balance sheet where people are spending money. There's inventory costs. There's all sorts of productivity improvements. There's transportation costs. So you can quite frankly and I'd gladly come to your business. You don't have to hire 30 new people. And I'll show you how to take 10% of the cost out easily without letting anyone go and improve your customer service.
I'm in a business that's very susceptible to the economy. I made it through 9/11 and the 2008 downturn without laying people off. But you're saying you've helped companies save billions of dollars and you've never suggested that they downsize their labor force?
No, there's been downsizes, absolutely.
So how many people and how many did you suggest get laid off and how many got laid off? That was the question.
Yep, I can't answer that question. It's like confidentiality. But yes, I have. I have recommended hard savings, and sometimes hard savings come in the form of letting people go. But you can get the majority of the easy savings out of the balance sheet, which are assets and things in there.
This is VPR's debate among four of the candidates running for governor. It's always interesting to hear what questions they have for one another. We've been hearing tonight from Democrat Peter Shumlin, Republican Scott Milne, Libertarian Dan Feliciano, and Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone. Coming up next, we'll hear the candidates answer questions posed by the public. This is VPR.
This is Vermont Public Radio. The UVM Lane Series presents vocal ensemble Room Full of Teeth on Friday, September 26th at the UVM Recital Hall in Burlington. Dedicated to mining the potential of the human voice, Room Full of Teeth employs a variety of vocal techniques from around the world. They'll perform Caroline Shaw's Partita for Eight Voices, which won a 2013 Pulitzer Prize. More information is at uvm.edu/laneseries. Fall is here, and for many Vermonters, that means wrapping up the gardening season. But others are thinking about getting their hands in the soil and planning ahead for next year's garden. Author, gardener, and VPR commentator Ron Krupp has a new book out where he chronicles the full year of a garden, and he spoke with VPR's Mitch Wertley about it. You can hear that conversation at vpr.net.
Welcome back to VPR's Governor's Debate among Republican Scott Milne, Libertarian Dan Feliciano, Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone, and Democrat Peter Shumlin. I'm Jane Lindholm with Bob Kinzel in VPR's Performance Studio.
We've been encouraging our listeners to write and record questions for the candidates, and we turn this round of questioning over to them. So let's hear our first question.
My name is Scott Woodward, and I'm a resident of Pomfret. My question relates to Vermont's renewable energy targets. I'd like to know whether the candidates support establishing a renewable portfolio standard instead of the voluntary goals in place now. Thank you.
Peter Shumlin.
You know, as you know, that's been a discussion for Vermont for some time. And my administration is working together with the renewable energy folks and lots of others to try to come up with a plan that will as the SPEED program gets phased out in 2017, that will address renewable energy credits in a way that continues to move us towards my goals of 90% renewable by 2050. We've made great progress, as I mentioned. We've quadrupled the number of solar panels since I've been governor of the state. We're harnessing the wind. We're moving into heat pumps with great exuberance. We're pushing forward on energy efficiency. We're actually leading the country right now on solar jobs. So this is one of the reasons that our jobs picture is coming back. And I keep saying if we address climate change aggressively, we will be the economic beneficiaries of the work that we're doing. It creates jobs, economic opportunity. We've got to stick with it.
Dan Feliciano?
Right. So we've spent roughly $600 million in subsidizing this renewable energy, and yet we only get 1.5% or 2% of our energy from it. I think we need to roll back the aggressive targets that Governor Shumlin has put in place. I don't believe they're actually creating jobs. You yourself said the economy's, the job market's flat. So I think we roll back those targets, take a more sensible approach to energy, and I believe the free markets will follow on and people will get away from the oppressive costs that we have right now in our energy market that's being driven by this renewable energy portfolio.
Scott Milne, just to go back to the question that came from Scott Woodward, resident of Pomfret, it relates to Vermont's renewable energy targets, and Scott wanted to know whether or not you support establishing a renewable portfolio standard instead of the voluntary goals that are now in place.
I do not.
Why not?
I believe that the energy policies that we have in Vermont are too aggressive for a state the size of Vermont's. The costs are all basically paid for with tax subsidies. My campaign is, you know, kind of boring. You know, we're mostly running a campaign of defense. I think that's really good. That's what we need. We need to slow down a little bit. It's too late to reverse the scarring of the ridgelines that people are all upset about. But I think we should put the brakes on new ridgeline development for the first couple of years of my administration. Let's let things settle down and see what's going on.
Peter Diamondstone, what are your thoughts about this?
I think that the standards should be set, but at a much higher level than we're now at. And I think we need to understand that we have to finish this project in the next 15 years, not only here in Vermont, but throughout the world. And there can be no delay, not 1 minute. We are sitting on a time bomb that has not more than 15 years before it blows. And all of us, we'll all go together when we go. That's the way the old song goes, right? And that's where we're headed, unless we actually stop global warming now. And I'm talking about not trading off carbon stuff. That's silly business. That's stuff that just keeps in place the production of the carbon. And that's got to stop. We've got to stop it now. Maybe we'll all be driving Teslas soon.
Our next question comes from Maureen, who wrote this on our Facebook page. Do you support the idea of the state government establishing the infrastructure for fast internet connections throughout the state as a public utility in order to provide fair access to citizens and to draw more technology-oriented jobs into the area? Dan Feliciano.
The technology is coming. The high-speed internet companies are bringing it to the state already. And I think, once again, I think we can keep the government out of it, and the companies will bring the high-speed internet that we need. You already have satellite internet with high-speed uplinks and downlinks. You don't need to run cable all over the country, all over the state, in order to get high-speed internet. So I think, once again, we leave it to the private markets to determine and open it up so that they can provide internet to, or whatever it is, whatever that next great new technology, fiber or Fios, whatever it might be, to the state.
Scott Mill?
It's a complicated question, and I very much am running a campaign of ideas. It's tough when a lot of questions come back to really hammering home some real shortcomings of the Shumlin administration. We have a governor that came in and promised that we were going to have internet to the last mile by now. We came in with a governor that promised we were going to have cell phone coverage across Vermont. I think he's got one of his key aides that he brought into the administration that's now at VTEL, which is allegedly going to have the whole state wired by the end of 2014. I think it's another example of a huge IT sort of project that's going to fail on your watch. I don't think the state is capable of governing anything the way I see it. They can't even get things done that they promise they're going to get done. I don't see giving them more responsibility to do anything.
Even if you're the governor?
If I'm the governor, I think we've got to spend 2 years slowing down, not getting into new things, not getting into new regulations. Let's fix what we've got. Let's get back on track.
Peter Diamondstone, do you support creating a public utility to get faster internet connections throughout the state?
Yes. Not only that public utility for that, but remember, I do not believe in private ownership of the major means of production and distribution, so that every effort and economy, except where you have one worker running their own business or so. There's a section in the Liberty Union platform, it's only a page long, that talks about protecting the rights of small business people and farmers, but small farms. But every other major industry belongs to the community at large. Competition is fundamentally evil. And what it does is it means to everyone that somebody's going to be at the bottom. And everybody else has to worry about being that person. And so we are scared. What? Yeah. All right. We are scared from, and fear motivates everything we do. That's not a helpful way to live. That's bad for our health. That's bad for our health care. Okay.
And Peter Shumlin.
This is one of the areas that I'm proud of, despite Scott's doom and gloom outlook on the administration. Look, when I came in, we put together the biggest public-private partnership probably in the history of the state, $400 million of federal dollars, worked with the private providers, and we are on track for delivering on the desperate need for Vermont to have high-speed internet access to every mile. What have we done? We now have a solution for every single address in Vermont. We're 98-90% of the way delivered, and we will get the rest of the way in a short period of time going forward. So I'm really proud of what we've done. There isn't any other governor that's done this, and we've got a lot to cheer about. Now, having said that, I think it's also important to remember who our critics are. And in this case, my critic was my mom. My mom lives on a dirt road in Putney, Westminster, West Vermont, and she had a copper line to her house, not adequate service. And she kept saying to me, Peter, come on. You said you're the governor. You're going to get internet. I never promised cell service, by the way, Scott, but you're going to get internet service to all of us. Well, guess what? My mom got high-speed internet access 3 months ago. So if my mom's with me as my greatest critic, I know we're making progress.
Here's a question that a lot of listeners want us to ask. There's a controversial natural gas pipeline proposed for western Vermont. Part of it's already under construction. The Public Service Board is looking at this again. We'd like to know, the listeners would like to know, do you fully support this project? Scott Mill?
We need to know a little bit more about the financing of it. I hear this argument as I'm going around Vermont talking to people that essentially the way it's structured, Vermont ratepayers are paying for it, even though the effective function of the pipeline more or less is to send the vast majority of the gas through to other customers. So if when you get through the details of it, we're Vermont ratepayers are paying for a gas line that's going to profit the Canadian company that we've outsourced 75% of our energy business to. It's something that we need to relook at. Philosophically, I think natural gas is a good bridge commodity to use till we get to a more renewable future.
So as governor, could you see yourself supporting this project?
I could see myself supporting this project.
Peter Diamondstone, what do you think about this pipeline
project? I can't support it, of course, unless it was a government function, and it isn't. There is no way that a person working for a capitalist can get more than half what they earn. The rest of it is taken by the capitalist for profits and for reinvestment. In a socialist system, the opposite is true. The workers pay themselves a fair amount, so the people who work on that pipeline would get paid fair income. The only problem is when we create a socialist government in one country at a time, the Red Queen comes out and tries to cut their heads off. And so it's always a perverted form of socialism, whether it's in Venezuela or if it's in Guatemala or Cuba or wherever it is, because the forces of the Red Queen are out to cut the heads off of all the people who sponsor. I mean, the revolution will not be televised.
Peter Shumlin, do you still support this project?
I do, and I am glad that the Public Service Board is looking at the new numbers in light of the crossed overruns. Obviously, that's their responsibility, and I'm going to support whatever decision they make. But listen, one of the reasons that Chittenden County and Franklin County are job centers right now are doing very well is because they've got cheap natural gas. Natural gas gets Vermont off of dirty oil. It gets Vermonters moving from dirty oil that they're burning in their furnaces to cleaner natural gas. I agree that it's a bridge fuel to a cleaner future. It puts money in their pockets. And if you look at the western side of the state, it's jobs challenge because it's transportation challenge. There's no interstate highway, so let's get them high-speed rail, which we're working on, higher-speed rail, and let's get them natural gas so they can grow jobs, economic opportunity, and save money, put money in Vermonters' pockets. If you said to Chittenden and Franklin County, hey, folks, we're going to take your gas away, you'd have a revolution. Trust me, if we can move it down the western side of the state, the rest of the state on that side will be as insistent that it's a great economic boon to them.
How concerned are you about the cost overruns of this project?
Well, the board's going to do a great job looking at those costs. And obviously, if there's not – and I believe that, you know, I'm going to leave it to them. I don't like, as a governor, commenting on what my quasi-judicial board is looking at. So I'm going to be careful about weighing in too carefully on that. What I will say is I think the Public Service Board process works. We've got a great board right now, and I know that they'll make the right decision. Leaving that question aside, because it's being – considered by the board, I believe that getting natural gas down the western side of the state is right for the climate and right for Vermonters' pocketbooks.
Dan Feliciano, what do you think of this project?
Cost overruns seem to follow you around, Governor. It's amazing.
It's amazing what I get blamed for. I'm not running the gas pipeline. It's not that.
So I think I could support the pipeline if it wasn't being done in a way that it's taking people's property and unfairly paying them a lower value for their land. A woman called me up and she was in tears saying that the pipeline was going to go 150 feet from her house across her family farm and that she was offered a minimal amount of money for that property. Putting the pipeline through her property essentially made it useless for her. It totally detracted the value. So if the pipeline is to go in, I'm okay as long as the government's not lending the money, as long as the government's not involved in it, and as long as the people's personal property is being protected. If it can be rerouted a different way, so be it. But my concern here is about government being involved in lending money and people's personal property rights being taken away from them.
We got a question from David, who wrote on our Facebook page to say, I've been a property owner in Vermont for 28 years. In that time, my property taxes have tripled. I just received my tax bill in the mail, and they have increased again, as has become the norm. Two-thirds of the bill is due to education, yet enrollment in the schools has declined. What, as governor, would you do to fix this situation? Peter Diamondstone?
All education, as Bill Meyer asked in 1958, all education should be paid for as a social cost. Every economist from the far left to the far right agrees that the level of education of a society is part of its wealth. When a kid goes to school and learns 2 and 2 is 4, the kid has contributed to the wealth of the society. What do you call people who get room and board in return for creating wealth? Slaves, do they not? Every student not only should not have to pay, but should be paid for doing the work, because that's a contribution to social wealth. So I have no problem about getting our taxes straightened out, decoupling from the federal taxes and starting to charge fair taxes to the wealthy of this state, beginning with every dollar you earn, you pay 13% Social Security tax on, not that you don't pay it off on your investments and you don't pay it on your capital gains in the stock market. We need to finance education from K to whenever. As I said, if they could do it in Iraq before we bombed them, we can do it here.
Peter Shumlin.
You know, Vermonters value our public education system. We have a great system, but we have a spending problem. And as the caller suggests or the writer suggests, we cannot sustain property tax increases that are reflecting the local spending decisions that are being made across the state. So what's the challenge? The challenge is we got to right-size the ship. We have 30,000 fewer students that we're educating than we had just a couple of decades ago. That number is going to continue to decrease. So what are we doing? My Secretary of Education, Rebecca Holcomb, who's a star, is out meeting with local communities a couple a week, trying to bring them together to say, listen, this is what your property taxes are right now. With your student count projections, this is what they're going to be in 5 years. This is what they're going to be in 10 years. We want to partner with you, because decisions should be made locally on this, to help find a way to right-size the ship. And we're going to do that community by community. Now, my opponent, Scott Milne, has a gimmick. He calls it a plan. I call a gimmick to cap the statewide property tax. I got to say that that is a terrible gimmick. It does nothing about spending, and it shifts the cost somewhere else. It would have been over $100 million in the last 2 years. If he'd done that 2 years ago, it would have been over $100 million, and he says he wants to shift that to the income tax. That would be the biggest income tax increase that I believe could ever happen. It also gives second homeowners a total break because they don't pay income taxes. It sticks it to the middle class, who's already struggling. And it will decimate quality as communities have to really fight to find ways to fund a decent education.
The question is about property taxes and funding education when property taxes are going up, yet enrollment in schools has declined. Dan Feliciano, your thoughts.
All right. So I've been clear that I'm in favor of returning control to the school, to the schools, to the local community, and I'm encouraging using a model similar to the Cleveland vouchering system, where 80% of the dollars will follow the student and 20% will stay in the local communities. I think by doing so and providing school choice, allowing parents to have school choice, parents and children will have a choice about where they could go to school, and in turn, schools will start to compete compete for those children and the dollars, and I think that'll drive down costs. So I think by using the Cleveland vouchering system, where 80% of the funds follow the student, and then providing school choice where someone can pick the school they want wherever community is, that would create a competitive network where schools will start to compete. Also, I think we need to look at understanding how we can reform some of the potential laws that are creating this funding problem. Right now, it's a very complicated system about when the school budget gets passed, the money goes back to Montpelier, and then how it gets redistributed to the schools. So we need to look at that as well.
And Scott Milne.
Thank you. I'll be talking more about the CAP property, the statewide educational property tax idea, or as some people would say, gimmick. I think it's already been adopted by municipalities in Chittenden County, in Orange County, in Windsor County, in Bennington County. I think by election it'll be adopted by communities on Main Street, by select boards, by city councils in every county in Vermont. So if you want to, as you told school boards, in March, Governor Shumlin, when property taxes are out of control, you encourage voters to go vote down the budgets and blame it on the school boards. I think in a couple of weeks you'll be blaming my gimmick on select boards and municipal officials that actually look through the rhetoric and see what the idea is meant to do, which is to be a catalyst to force legislators to be accountable on the record before Election Day in November, whether they're going to support it or not, and what they're going to do to fundamentally restructure education so that we have a predictable connection between increase in cost of education and increase in property taxes, which does not exist now for many, many communities in Vermont.
This is VPR's Governor's Debate. In the time that we have remaining, we want to get slightly shorter answers to some of these questions to see if we can hit around 30 seconds in this final round. And we have a lot of questions we want to be able to ask you. They're not complicated. Could be yes or no or a little bit more than that.
All right. Let's start with should Vermont legalize marijuana? Scott Milne.
I do not advocate for legalization of marijuana in the short term. I think it's a bad idea, but I think as one of the three fundamental principles upon which I founded my campaign is the more locally decisions can be made, the better. So if you're listening and you think marijuana should be legalized, I would encourage you to talk to your legislators. I'm not going to advocate for it. I'm not going to pressure people. If I get a bill, I'll sign it. But on the record, I think it's a bad idea to rush into it. I think we should have more states go through it. It's clearly a train that's coming our way, but no sense jumping on board too soon.
Peter Diamondstone.
Liberty Union believes that all narcotics should be legalized, whether they're produced by Big Pharma or they're private sales. And note that while the Taliban were in control of Afghanistan, there was no heroin in the United States. Did you know that? It's only after we got rid of the Taliban that we started getting heroin throughout our state. Something to look at. And
we'll leave it there. Peter Shumlin.
I've told my friends, Governor Hickenlooper in Colorado and Governor Inslee in Washington State, thank you for going first on this, for figuring it out for us, and we're going to learn from you, as Scott just suggested. We have a RAND study that's out there that's going to look at both the pros and cons of legalization. It's going to be a debate in Vermont, and I'm not going to make a commitment on this until I see what the RAND study says. But as you know, I agree with Scott on this. It's a train that's coming our way. It's a conversation we must have. Let's let Washington State and Colorado figure out where the bumps in the road are.
Dan Feliciano.
The same position. So if it came across my desk and all the studies were done, I'd sign it.
Let's talk about climate change. It's come up this evening already. Do you believe it's a serious issue? Do you think it's primarily caused by human activity? And is it a real threat to the state of Vermont? Scott Mill?
I think there's been a climate change of hot air in this room since this debate started, myself included as being a human contributor to it. So Mr. Diamondstone actually is pretty rational on the three of us, I think, have challenges with controlling our rhetoric, which I'm trying to get better at. I think climate change is a reality. I think it's something that we need to deal with. I think we need to properly, optimally, intelligently manage the people's money and realize that we're a state of 600,000 people. We've got a population the size of Columbus, Ohio. We can't be doing everything. We want to be responsible citizens, but the government can't be sticking its neck out and getting too far overboard on spending money on this.
Dan Feliciano?
I don't think climate change is as big an issue as we're actually making it. And as a small state as we are, I don't think that anything we can do is really going to impact it as much as we think it's going to be. So, I don't think it's really that big of an issue right now.
Peter Shumway.
I think Scott and Dan are living in a different state than I am on this one. I believe climate change is one of the biggest challenges that we face. Anyone that went out and managed the three climate change storms that I've managed, including Irene, hugging the Vermonters that lost their family members, their businesses, their homes, their farms, and their livelihoods, understands that it's the biggest single challenge that we face. We didn't used to get 12 inches of rain dumped on Vermont in 3 or 4 hours in huge storms. It is going to get worse, and we cannot move fast enough to embrace renewable energy, to embrace energy efficiency, and to show the rest of the country how to get this right. And as governor, I will stay focused on that every single day that I have the privilege of having this job.
Peter Diamondstone.
I can't disagree with the governor, but I don't think he's even stating the case strong enough. We are on the verge of a disaster beyond belief. And if we don't act individually and in every state and in every country, and I'm talking about putting the pressure on Obama Bush, as well as on the members of the legislature. It's too late to put pressure on Bush 3 or on Clinton Bush, but Obama Bush needs to be pushed, and pushed very, very hard. Unless we stop the carbonization of the atmosphere, we are dead. Dead. Get it?
Another question for you all. Should Vermont require that all children be fully immunized before they go to school? In other words, no more philosophical exemptions. Dan Feliciano?
No, I think parents have that right and choice to decide if they're going to immunize their children.
Peter Shumway.
I agree with Dan.
So the two of you would do away, I mean, you would keep the philosophical exemption in place.
That's correct.
Absolutely.
Scott Mill?
I think it's a complicated issue, and I'm not qualified to answer that. I think that there's public safety concerns about non-immunized people causing problems for society, and we need to have science and facts to back it up. It's not a political answer. It should be a practical answer, and I don't have that answer right now.
What do you think, Peter Diamondstone?
One of the problems is that you can't hold the manufacturer responsible in a lawsuit if you are injured. You can only sue the United States government. We protect big business, just like we protected the nuclear power plants. So why are we protecting them? The dose of mercury that you get, if you brought that amount into school, you'd be kicked out and expelled, right? So we're giving people mercury, and then we're saying, oh, it's not hurting their brains. I'll watch my language. I got to be careful here. You know, I don't want to get arrested again.
So just to be clear on that question, you would keep the philosophical exemption, let parents make their own decisions?
Absolutely. It's not, and it's not philosophical. It's about health itself. Because you can't give kids mercury and expect to have no result. I mean, we already have a $5 million judgment, by the way, against the United States government for autism caused by injection. $5 million, first one.
We have another lightning round question as we continue in VPR's gubernatorial debate here. Should the state raise the gas tax to pay for road repairs? Peter Shumlin?
Well, we just did, and we had to because of the I would say lack of responsibility in Washington to get anything smart done. So what did we do with it? Since I've been governor, we've reduced the amount of insufficient roads from 32% to 22% with the two biggest transportation budgets in the history of the state. We also have reduced the number of deficient bridges from 22% to 12%. This really matters, not only for job creation, but quality of life. We're doing more paving, more road building, and more job creation than any governor so far. And I'm going to stick to rebuilding that crumbling infrastructure. And if we and as you know, we've raised the gas tax, which is allowing us to do it. I thank Vermonters for supporting us in that effort. No one wants to pay higher gas taxes, but if we don't, we have crumbling roads and bridges. It's that simple.
Scott Mill.
I think Governor Shumlin just said he's created more jobs than any governor in history, which I think is a misstatement.
I misspoke. I said we've created a lot of jobs from our road construction projects.
Okay, and Scott, the question is, do you think the state should raise the gas tax to pay for road repairs?
I think the gas tax should be used as a primary vehicle for road repairs. I'm concerned about this movement towards putting tracking devices on cars and tracking how many miles they drive so that you're taxing people that are using fuel-efficient cars for their share of using the roads. I think if we're concerned about climate change, people should be incentivized for getting more fuel-efficient cars. And as people's cars get more efficient, if we need more money to pay for roads, we should figure out a way of using a gas tax to do that. Seems fair to me. I would suggest we look at a regional compact with other states so that people aren't driving my part of the country and your former part of the country, state, Governor Shumlin. Folks drive over to New Hampshire to fill their tanks up all the time, and it's a problem. I think if we get Northern New England with a similar tax structure, it would be a good idea.
Peter Diamondstone, your thoughts on
that? I have no problem with increasing the gas tax. We may want to consider the principle to each according to need, and maybe there's some rebates going to be due to some people who need the money to get from, like my grandson needs to get to a job, right? I mean, and he's not making $1 million, I guarantee it. So we need to have the balancing side of this, that is, to each according to need, and that may mean a rebate to some people who are in a low-income category and use fossil fuel to get themselves back and forth to work.
And Dan Feliciano.
You're killing me, Governor. Cost overruns, taxes, there's a better way to do this. We can improve the efficiency of our government so that we don't have to raise taxes and still have great roads. We need to look at how we're doing the job of repairing the roads, maintaining the roads more efficiently. We need to look at how to do things more efficiently rather than raising taxes. Absolutely not.
Okay, and final lightning round question here before we get to a final question for each of you. Do you support a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages, sometimes called a soda tax? Dan Feliciano.
You're killing me. No, I do not support a tax on soda. I think that just as much as I want people to have control over how they spend their money, what schools they go to, what homes they buy, I think that if a person wants to buy a sugary substance, they should have the right to do so. I think that it's a personal choice, and I know that I've been on the bandwagon talking about health costs and how 20% of every dollar by 2016 is predicted to go to obesity. I still think it's a personal choice, and we don't need to tax it.
Peter Diamondstone.
I would ban the sale of sodas to people under the age of 18. We ban the sale of alcoholic beverage, which I don't think we should do. And we ban the sale of marijuana, which I don't think we should do. But we should ban the sale of sugary foods and high fructose foods to people under the age of 18.
Scott Mill, do you support a sugar-sweetened beverage tax?
That's an interesting idea, Mr. Diamondstone. I never heard that before, but it's interesting. I agree that with Dan. I think it's interesting in these piecemeal discussions about what tax should raise and what tax you wouldn't raise. I think we all agree that we've got a spending problem, not a tax problem. We really need to figure out how to get the government in Vermont growing at a rate of the economy so we don't need to raise taxes on things.
Peter Shumlin.
You know, I probably travel around Vermont more than almost anybody, or certainly as much as anybody. And I got to tell you, I very rarely run into a Vermonter who says, hey, I got a lot of extra loot. Things are really looking great. Could you please tax me? And my feeling about this tax is when you raise a tax, you have to ask the question. And I hope we don't. I haven't raised the income tax, haven't raised the sales, haven't raised the rooms and meals. And I'm going to stick to it, I hope. But when it comes to this one, who are you taxing? The answer is, in this case, in my view, you're taxing mostly low-income Vermonters. You're asking those who have the least to pay the most. I don't think that's how you affect change.
This is VPR's gubernatorial debate with Libertarian Dan Feliciano, Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone, Democrat Peter Shumlin, and Republican Scott Milne. We have time for one final question for you all. Remember, we've got a 60-second limit here. Peter Shumlin, start us off. Why do you deserve a third term in office?
Well, it's been a huge privilege to be governor. And, my view is that we've got a lot more work to do. As I've mentioned, we've made real progress on job growth. We've made progress on renewable energy. We've made progress on early child education, higher education, workforce retraining, and make college more affordable. We're making progress on our transportation infrastructure. But as you know, we have a lot more work to do. And the challenge we're facing is that the middle class continues to get kicked in the teeth. Low-income Vermonters continue to lose ground. This isn't just a problem for Vermont. It's a problem for America. But I think that my bold leadership has allowed us to tackle issues that really matter. I want to continue to do this job, and I hope Vermonters will give me the privilege of doing so that we can continue on the good progress that we've made. We've got a lot to be proud of. We've got a lot more work to do.
Peter Diamondstone, how would a Diamondstone administration change Vermont?
Well, there would be no more corporations giving money to anybody because there would be no corporations. All major means of production and distribution would be a function of communities and neighborhoods, and that would be true of medical services as well. Capitalism doesn't work and will lead ultimately to the destruction of the planet because they keep wanting to do more and more and more and more, and more and more is not helping. Less and less would help. And people need to be able to spend more leisure time. Jobs should be 20 hours a week, and people should have leisure time, the rest of it, and make enough money in that 20 hours what they would ordinarily make in 40 hours. But you can't do that in the capitalist system because the capitalist is ripping off half the wages.
Dan Feliciano, what should voters remember about you when they go to the polls in November?
I'm against single payer. I think we have better options out there to reduce health care costs. I'm for cutting spending, and I have a background in cutting spending. I'm for reducing property taxes through school choice, and I'll protect the Second Amendment to the fullest extent. So when it comes to creating jobs, stopping the single payer, which I believe will destroy jobs, not create jobs, cutting spending so that we don't have to continually raise taxes, improving the efficiency of the government when we're cutting spending, reducing property taxes and school choice, giving people back control of their lives, giving them the ability to make choices that they want to make. That's what people need to be clear about.
Scott Milne, why should voters think you are the best candidate in this race?
I'd like voters to believe that I have the background and the temperament to be a good governor. I've run a small business for 25 years. I worked with my mom and dad pretty much every day over that time. I've got kids that I've got actually convinced, and one of them convinced his boss to let him come back to Vermont to work on my campaign. I've got a deep love for Vermont that goes back generations. I'm in this race very much for the right reasons. I want Vermont to be a better place going forward. I think the boring, better place that we need to get to over the next few years is let's slow down, let's not rush into things, let's get more balance in Montpelier so that we've got a chance to step back and think about things before we rush into them. So clearly I've got a good background of running a business. I know how to manage teams. I think I can do a good job of putting people in place that will recover from some of the mismanagement of the people's money that we've seen over the last 4 years, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Well, that concludes tonight's debate. I'd like to thank the candidates here, Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone, Democrat Peter Shumlin, Republican Scott Milne, and Libertarian Dan Feliciano. Thank you all very much for being part of this debate.
Thank you both.
Sorry everybody couldn't be here.
VPR's election debates are produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sage Van Wing. Our production team includes Chris Albertine, Aaron Lucy, and Peter Biello. The executive producer is John Van Hoosen, and our theme music was written and performed by Eric Ewazen and the New Trombone Collective.
Jane and I will be hosting debates for statewide and federal offices during Vermont Edition throughout the month of October, and you can follow all of VPR's election coverage at vpr.net. Thanks for listening, and have a great night.